John Clayton. Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, in all my years of covering football, covering sports, covering whatever, you come up with weird stories, and the weirdest one, one of the weirdest ones, I think, is the Quentin Dunbar story in the standpoint that I guess we're still waiting to see if he's going to turn himself in for to the police. But the story that came out through TMZ yesterday is just absolutely incredible. And what you wonder is where that's going to head. But we'll get into that in the top five stories of the day, the top five brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
What is the one thing coaches in the NFL hate? Players with free time. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Players with free time. And in a situation where we are, where we have virtual workouts, or in some teams basically saying, just work out on your own like this, you'll be fine. This is the time of the year where almost every general manager and head coach hopes their phone doesn't ring.
Well,
so they hear something like this allegedly.
And, of course, that's Trey Wingo talking about Quentin Dunbar facing four counts of armed robbery down in Florida. DeAndre Baker, the first-round pick cornerback from the New York Giants from last year, he's got eight counts because apparently what ended up happening is that the other night, Dunbar and, again, we're going on what TMZ and was in the police reports and all those different things are going. And, again, this is all alleged. And so, you know, no, we don't know exactly what all Dunbar did. But according to the reports, you know, both he had like three cars outside waiting for them. They had lost like about $70,000 gambling the previous night. And so then Dunbar goes in along with Baker. Baker had the gun. There's mixed reports. Three people said that Dunbar did not have a gun. That's why he doesn't have the eight counts, I guess. But he did allegedly get involved in taking the watches, the money, all those different things, because here's Baker at gunpoint allegedly doing this. And so right now, you have to wonder, and the Seahawks, of course, basically had the normal statement you're going to have, aware of the situation, still gathering information, and then defer to the league investigators. But if found guilty of this, you can anticipate that, you know, six-game suspension at least, you know, going, because again, one thing that is on the mind of Roger Goodell is anything involving a gun. And if indeed they're in there, you know, using a gun, or at least in the case of Baker, I mean, this thing is going to be a very serious thing. And so what you wonder, I think they'll stand by him because, again, they know he's a good player. He was on the conference call yesterday with reporters on Zoom, didn't say anything about it. But of course, at that time, the arrest warrant had not been out. I know that his thought seems to be it's not that bad. And so you have to give the benefit of the doubt while we wait it out. But if indeed that he's that involved in this, you have to kind of wonder, you know, would they cut him? What would they do? You know, would they need to go? Because, again, one thing they do have confidence in, they still have confidence in Trey Flowers. I mean, this was kind of a bonus gift trade in the sense you give a fifth-round pick, you get a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback who's very young, only being paid $3.25 million a year, and can come in kind of like they saw last year when they got Quandre Diggs, and that turned out to be a great trade, and this looked to be a good trade. And right now, everything's uncertain. While first, we have to find out if he's going to turn himself in, and Baker turned himself in. That's not happened so far with the Miramar, Florida police. You would imagine they would be going in sometime today, but plenty of things to talk about with this. We're going to talk to Will Brinson of CBS Sports. He'll be joining us at 10:30. We'll also talk to Bob Condotta at 11 on just one of this very unusual story involving a Seahawk cornerback.
Number two.
He's a good athlete. He's got a good arm. He's played a lot of football. We've seen enough of him to see that he's got enough style to play the game and all that. Just need to see where he fits in. I think the things that we do with our offense will fit very well with him. He's got a good strong arm, and he can move and throw the ball on the move and all that stuff we like to do.
That's Pete Carroll. Of course, you know that they do like Anthony Gordon, who got $12.5 million as a signing bonus, highest among the undrafted rookies. But the move that I think was smart yesterday was getting Geno Smith back. Geno comes in on a one-year contract. My guess would be probably much a minimum deal like it was last year. He fits in well in the locker room, and it kills all that crazy stories that are going around. Like, again, I think they would not have been wise to bring in Cam Newton. Plus, Cam Newton would not sign for the NFL minimum. You know, he still wants to be a starting quarterback. back, and I just didn't think that would be a good fit here, but at least that eliminates that part of it, and hopefully it eliminates all the stupid stories coming out about all the trade talk with Cleveland and having him go with Russell Wilson in a trade. I mean, some of this stuff just gets ridiculous. But the smart move was getting Geno Smith back. It's, again, just a one-year deal. Still, they're looking to get a defensive tackle who's a run stopper. Damon Harrison, I think, would be a good addition if they can talk him out of retirement, because I know he's been talking about retirement. But he's got, a bunch of guys here from Detroit that would be his teammates that I think that he would like, and certainly he's going to like the situation. They might need a veteran running back like Carlos Hyde or Devontae Freeman. That's still in the mix, and naturally they still are leaving their options open on Jadeveon Clowney.
Number three.
Yeah, Mike, I'd hate to let a Zoom go by without a question about Clowney. Wondering if you yourself had spoken to him at all during this whole free agency process, and if so, if you've got any idea of his train of thought or a timetable.
I've not talked to JD.
It's Mike Vrabel saying that he's not talked to Jadeveon Clowney, who's out there still waiting to do it, and of course Seattle still leaving the door open. And the crazy part about the Clowney thing, and there's so many crazy parts about it, I mean, Tennessee's interested, but they're not going to do anything until he can take a team physical. That Mike Vrabel would love to have him come in there and help the defense out and see if they can put it over the top, but no movement coming from Clowney. And there's at least, I guess, several times Seattle kept upping the offer for him, and they never get a counteroffer coming back from Clowney. And so Clowney just sits, waits. Tennessee is an option, but I'd still think that if Clowney does want to make a counteroffer at some point, Seattle can still be in the mix. But right now, it still doesn't look like Clowney's going to be a Seahawk.
Number four.
I've never heard anything so crazy in my life.
So it's not true at all?
No.
Would you have definitely have known if John had those conversations?
No, I'm sure John and John Snyder are really tight, and I'm sure if they're having conversations on their own and just jiving around and doing those kind of things, I would think if something was serious about that, we the executive team and the organization would have known. I never heard that.
Our thanks to Hugh Jackson for clearing up the stupidest story that we've heard this year about a Russell Wilson trade talk with the Cleveland Browns. Hugh, of course, was the head coach of the Browns and never heard anything like that. And, of course, Chris Sims was the first to bring this up, and it was kind of backed up a little bit by Mike Florio saying that he heard rumors in 2018, Wilson and the Browns, and, of course, Hugh Jackson just squashed it big time, which I think was great for Hugh to be able to do, because again, this was an unbelievably dumb story that really has never happened. Hey, GMs talk to each other all the time. John Dorsey's tight with certainly John Snyder, but was there any effort to trade Russell Wilson to Cleveland? Absolutely no.
Number five.
The economic effects are devastating, frankly, for the clubs. We're a big business, but we're a seasonal business. And unfortunately, this crisis began at kind of the low point for us in terms of revenue. We haven't quite started our season yet. And if we don't play a season, the losses for the owners could approach $4 billion.
That's Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, who had a good interview on CNN last night talking about baseball's attempt to start the season. And he's estimating that the league would lose about $4 billion in revenue if there's no season. And right now, the players aren't doing the 50-50 revenue split, but they're just now in the beginning of trying to talk about what they can do as far as the pay for the players with all the missed games. They're talking about an 82-game season. I know that Blake Snell of the Rays was an absolutely crazy comments about, I want full pay if I'm going to go out there because I'm risking myself. And yeah, you are risking yourself, but you're also saying the money's more important than risking. If you would get the full pay, you'd be out there. So under the proposal by baseball is that abbreviated spring training would begin in June, regular season starting in early July. All those options are on the table as the players discuss it with ownership. You can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we go into further review and naturally, we're going to talk about Quentin Dunbar if he doesn't end up playing this year or what ends up happening. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
We're going to try to sorting out the crazy situation involving Quentin Dunbar. And, of course, as yesterday he got four charges of armed robbery, you know, going in with New York Giant cornerback DeAndre Baker. Baker Kelly wielding a firearm and, of course, trying to take money away and taking watches and everything else away from people at a party. And I guess they were gambling the night before or trying to at least recover all that, which was just an amazing, amazing story. But what ends up happening is now you have to look and see what are the ramifications of this. And I guess, you know, we don't know from the legal standpoint where it's going to go. At some point today, you figure both have to go in and take care and, you know, turn themselves in because there's a warrant out for both of them. And so now what has to look at is that where this stands for the Seahawks and what they might do. Certainly, if it looks bad, they may very well have to cut him, or they might have to wait to see if he's going to get a suspension. You know, you would imagine because it was an armed robbery type of thing. If he does, you know, and he's found guilty, then it could be the 6-game suspension for player conduct. But I guess the question now is there, how much of an impact and how much would it hurt the team if Dunbar gets suspended or if he gets thrown off the team? That was a topic yesterday on Bob, Dave, and More.
Talking about what the team does moving forward. Now, I've seen reports they could save a little over $3 million, $3.4 million if they release Dunbar on the salary cap. Maybe that opens up, you know, some money for somebody to take that spot. Now, some of the more, I guess, Logan Ryan is a guy that's being talked about out there for other teams, whether it's the Jets or the Dolphins. He was formerly with the Tennessee Titans. Maybe he becomes an option now. Maybe the Seahawks jump in on something like that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the same list that Maura just sent out to us. But a few guys with Seattle, Akeem King and Kalen Reed, that are out there. And if all is equal, you know, they'd probably rather have a guy back that's familiar, at least, with the situation. But other than that, you know, you go and look at their roster right now, and it's a lot of young guys. And, you know, all of a sudden you go back to looking at like, okay, it's back to being Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin, which I still defend Trey Flowers. He had 3 interceptions, 2 sacks. He made a lot of tackles. He's physical. So, but still, I mean, you just don't have the same level of competition. And now you're having to go back to the kind of free agents that are out there that aren't really, you know, they didn't go in that first or second or third wave even. So, I mean, those are guys that might get filled in to just to fill in a roster. They might get signed. But other than that, you know, you've really got just a bunch of young guys.
So what happens now? Of course, I look at the Dunbar trade for a 5th-round pick as putting this offseason over the top. Certainly not getting Clowney back as a setback, but you know it looks like they've at least got enough bodies right now to try to get through it. They did add 15.5 sacks, you know, with the 2 veterans that they brought in, Benson Mayoa and also Bruce Irvin. But what I do is I look at this deal as a bonus. And Curtis, what I say it's a bonus is that it was kind of like the Quandre Diggs thing. Here's Diggs, becomes available, Pro Bowl alternate. I mean, they had, you know, 3 safeties that they were, you know, using and they liked. I mean, particularly the guy that they liked long term is going to be Marquise Blair. You know, they had Tedrick Thompson, who's no longer on the team now, but he started and struggled. Then they had Leno Hill, who's still on the team, and then Marquise Blair. But then they get Diggs, and Diggs comes in and really helps out this defense, you know, putting a Pro Bowl type player at the safety position. Well, Dunbar was going to be the Pro Bowl type safety or cornerback on the other side of the other side of Shaquille Griffin. But, you know, they still have Trey Flowers, and so they can survive because, again, you know, where people are so down on Trey Flowers, was it any different than a year ago when everybody was down on Shaquille Griffin? Shaquille Griffin bounced back, had a Pro Bowl season. Now he's at that contract, is in a contract year this year, and Flowers has a chance to bounce back. I mean, you know, Flowers did start all season, and he had good games. Certainly there were some games that he struggled. The interference rule affected him probably a little bit more than most cornerbacks. But if something does happen as far as, you know, Dunbar getting cut, suspended, you know, Flowers is still there.
He is still there. And you mentioned that the Dunbar signing was, you know, kind of a luxury acquisition during the offseason. But I think it morphed from a luxury into almost a necessity because of the Seahawks not addressing the defensive line the way that I think a lot of people had hoped they would, where,
you can make up, I think, for, you know, a lack of pass rush if your secondary is able to clamp down the way we had anticipated it would with Dunbar in the secondary. Now that is up in the air, and all of a sudden the Seahawks defense kind of looks a lot like last year's minus Jadeveon Clowney, and we don't know if Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayowa can make up for the lack of pass rush that we saw last year. So it really puts the Seahawks defense in a sticky situation to where I don't know if they're going to be any better than what they were last year, and that's, you know, even with Quentin Dunbar on the roster.
Well, I still think that, I mean, Dunbar obviously would have been the difference maker that would take him, you know, much, you know, over the top. But I still think when you even look, if it's not Dunbar and if it's not Clowney, you know, they still are better. And here's where they're better in the sense that, okay, sure, they lose Quentin Jefferson in free agency. You know they're going to get a run-stopping defensive tackle. That'll fill in for the Al Woods departure. But, you know, you start to look at the Clowney situation and, you know, talking to some people, you know, really in many ways, you look at Clowney's talents, and, of course, he's not a double-digit sack guy. So in many ways, you know, what he might have done in coming back is play more of the five technique on the outside. And of course, they still believe that LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, they can come on and handle that. And then you have the four Leos on the other side, the two draft choices, Daryl Taylor, who's going to try to challenge for that starting job. Then you also have, Robinson. Then you also have the two veterans, you know, Irvin and Mayowa. And of course, I mean, say what you want about Mayowa and Irvin, they get 15 and a half sacks. And so, again, ideally, you'd still like to have Clowney because you got, you know, the sixth or seventh best edge rusher in the league coming on there. And, you know, and I still think that, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to come back, but I think that they can survive. But overall, right now, the Dunbar situation is not a good one, and it's one that has bad ramifications, but I think they can still survive, and I do think their defense will be better. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or your app. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Will Brinson of CBS Sports about the Dunbar situation. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's John Clayton, 2 hours every day, 10 to noon.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand on the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline is Will Brinson from CBS Sports and, of course, CBSSports.com. And I got a chance to talk about the National Football League. I guess the big story here in the Seattle area and, of course, now through the country is Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker, you know, losing money, I guess, like $70,000 gambling, and then going in with a gun, trying to get money and taking the money away from when they were at a party. I mean, how crazy is this? And what do you see happening? I mean, well, you would have to think that if found guilty, you know, both players are going to get the personal conduct issue. They may be at least not allowed to do anything while they're investigating. And how crazy is a story like this?
Yeah, I mean, John, it's amazing that no matter how long you cover this league and no matter how often you say, I think I've seen the craziest story I'll ever see, it's like there's always something that pops up that manages to at least challenge it. This is one of them. I mean, you know, I think it's interesting, too, from a bigger picture perspective to somehow take a step back, too, and look at, like, you know, we had this trade of Quentin Dunbar. And, I mean, I think the Redskins were, you know, pretty much buried across the, you know, anybody that covered the league or covered the Seahawks or the Redskins buried Washington for the trade of Quentin Dunbar because, you know, they gave up, they got a fifth back for Dunbar, and then they used a fifth to get Kyle Allen. And it just felt like an inequitable swap for Washington. And now you sort of wonder, like, all right, maybe, you know, did Ron Rivera sort of, I'm not saying he knew this would happen, but you wonder, you know, in the process of mixing up the culture and changing the way they operate there in Washington, did he sort of have an inkling that maybe, you know, they needed to move on one way or the other? And, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's a bigger concern for the Giants, probably. I mean, it's obviously a big concern for both teams. But, I mean, the Giants invested a first-round pick. They traded back in the first round and, you know, in that draft and when they, you know, came away with three future cornerstones for their franchise in Dexter Lawrence, Daniel Jones, and DeAndre Baker. And, you know, to have this happen for a first-round pick, I'm not saying that you can predict what players are going to do or what human beings are going to do, you know, when they're given a lot of money. I think it's an impossible task. But, man, I mean, you know, if you're Dave Gettleman, you know, you've been, you know, your job is to, you know, you need to have a playoff team this year. It's imperative almost, or a team that can challenge for the playoffs. And, you know, you're kicking off the start to the, what would normally be a very quiet period in the NFL, you know, sort of the vacation time here, by having your would-be lockdown cornerback, you know, the future, a first-round pick, getting involved in this sort of situation. It is a bad look, and I cannot fathom a scenario, John, if these allegations are proven to be, you know, anywhere close to true, or you know, or there's any sort of you know, guilty plea or conviction, where these guys aren't seeing a 4 to 6 game suspension.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I think it'd go the 6 game because it's going to be player conduct. And I think that's easy right. to see that could happen. But what it's going to be a major setback to the Seahawks if that's going to be the case. And then what you wonder about, do they just cut him? Because, I mean, the two things that have to worry you is that, you know, they go in a robbery attempt. And, of course, if it's indeed proven to be true. But also, what about the gambling issue? Because, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
You would have to figure if they lose $70,000 gambling, this probably wasn't the first time that it happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is absolutely a fair thing to say, that your first time gambling, you don't go gamble $70,000. One, I mean, what you would hope anyway, like that would be an aggressive dabble into the world of gambling on cards. And yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, if you're the Seahawks, you probably have to think about cutting him. I mean, you only gave up a fifth round pick for him, so that's the good news. You know, you help on that defense, and certainly I don't think this is going to be, you know, it doesn't look like the greatest defense that Pete Carroll is ever going to trot out in the first place. You have concerns about edge help, and now you have to worry about Dunbar, and who you thought was going to be an impact player in 2020. I don't know how Seattle holds on to him. And I think one of the things you have to worry about, too, is like when this happens, you know, the headline is always going to be, you know, either Seahawks defensive back or former Seahawks defensive back until the next person signs him. Like, you know, like it was with, you know, with Greg Hardy, and, you know, he was a Panthers player, and then the Cowboys signed him, and then he becomes a Cowboys guy. You know, that's a PR problem. And I think it's even more impactful as a public relations issue during this time when there's not a whole lot going on. Like, I'm not saying this story would fly under the radar in a normal year, but I do think, you know, if you had baseball and you had basketball going on, it would be out there, but it would at least sort of get caught up in the wave of other sports news. And that's just not the case this year. So to me, it's something that's going to linger and linger in the public perception. And it's hard to imagine a scenario where they don't move on from it.
Oh, yeah, no question. And, yeah, because, you know, Roger Goodell, I mean, the gun issue is a big thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's debates, I guess, among the victims, you know, whether Quentin Dunbar had a gun. Three people said no, but one person said yes. But certainly, I mean, he was allegedly involved in, you know, grabbing the money, the Rolexes and everything else. And so, you know, he was actively, if proven true, involved in the robbery.
Yeah, I mean, if you're running down a checklist of things that Roger Goodell doesn't want you doing, as he's sort of putting together a blueprint for what he would suspend somebody for, I think the first two things would probably be guns and gambling. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe there's other stuff, but those are right up there in terms of what you don't want players doing in the off season. And I, you know, when you mix guns and gambling, and you have this situation where, you know, regardless of whether or not Quentin Dunbar had a gun, and I believe, you know, DeAndre Baker, everybody, all those witnesses said that he did, you know, you're still involved with somebody who had a gun and who was holding up a party to take a bunch of watches from people. I mean, these guys are professional athletes with big salaries. Like, these guys are not, you know, these guys are not making, you know, $50,000 a year and trying to scrape by and steal watches. I mean, these guys are, you know, they are being paid handsomely to play professional football, and to do this act where you host a party and have a car, you know, high stakes card game, and then you allegedly rob the patrons of their watches. I mean, it is a bizarre scenario, and certainly not something that I think the league will condone, especially when we have so much of a focus on this particular sport, because it's really the only thing going vis-a-vis its offseason.
Well, and particularly at a time that you know, everybody should be is staying at home and, you know, not going to parties. And you wonder, first off, you wonder how big the party was in Miramar and who was involved in the parties. And then, of course, if you're losing money and then taking it back, I mean, who are these people?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like, you know, I mean, if in these times of our quarantine, I mean, if you're having a card game, you should be doing it on Zoom or like Poker Stars or something, you know, something like that. Like you shouldn't be hanging out at a party all together playing cards. That is a, you know, you talk about, like, I think there's a video out there that showed, you know, they put invisible paint on people and showed what happens if you sit in a room and eat a meal, you know, with five or six people, how quickly that paint would spread to everybody. Well, if you're playing cards, I mean, that is a high octane contaminant in terms of being able to spread potential contagious diseases. So, like, first of all, like, just from a pandemic standpoint, it's a bad idea to get together and play cards. And then, you know, to do that in the off season, this is something that just, it feels very, you know, it's very off season-ish. But the idea that you would host this party and then, for whatever reason, end up needing to take money back in the form of watches or cash or whatever it is from the people who visited the party. It's all very bizarre. Like, did they know these guys coming in? Did they just hear about this party and think there was a chance to win some money? Obviously these guys who are playing in the card game have some nice watches and some, you know, I mean, like, you know, if you're wearing a Rolex, you got some cash on you. So there are a lot of questions to be asked about the party itself that maybe we're almost overlooking because the act itself is so surprising.
Well, and then also, what about the three car drivers that they're out there, one in a Lamborghini, you know, three rich cars, and, you know, who were they, and what happens to them?
Yeah, and along the same lines, like, you know, if those cars, and I believe, you know, from what I've read, that they were sort of positioned in a Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 11 kind of getaway style. I mean, that, you know, that sort of takes itself from, you know, this wasn't a case where, like, people played cards and things got heated and someone pulled out a firearm and, you know, was like, give me your watch and took off. I'm not saying that's better, but, you know, there's at least like a passion of, you know, a crime of passion type of situation there where, you know, maybe that mitigates the circumstances. If this was a planned situation where you lure in a bunch of people who you know are going to be wearing expensive jewelry and you know will have a bunch of cash on them, you play a high-stakes card game, and then you take all the money and all the watches and you sprint out to expensive getaway cars, like, that is a very pre-planned and, you know, a laid out sort of situation that I think would create, you know, it makes it even worse. You know, it's not the sort of circumstances you want if you're trying to make the case that this was, you know, an alleged crime of, you know, crime that happened under duress and the heat of an argument.
No doubt. Big picture, though, where do you put Seattle in the mix? You know, if Dunbar's not going to be on the team, or if he's suspended, and, you know, where do you kind of put Seattle in the mix among the NFC teams?
I mean, the thing about Seattle is, and, you know, I think 2019 was a perfect example of it, is that as long as you have Russell Wilson, you can never count out the Seattle Seahawks, because he might be the best magician in the NFL in terms of being able to pull a rabbit out of his hat late in games and pull off crazy wins. Seattle was one of the luckiest teams along with the Packers last year in terms of winning those one score games. You know, I think for me, I think they are a contender in the NFC because of Russell Wilson. I know Vegas has their over under set at 9.5. I would lean under on Seattle. It worries me a little bit. And Marshawn Lynch is a Seahawks legend. I get it. But it worries me a little bit for the, you know, what's going on with Rashad Penny and Chris Carson and their recovery if Seattle is really pushing to bring Beast Mode back into the fold. You know, he's older, he's retired a couple of times, and, you know, not necessarily the most efficient runner. So I have concerns about that. And if that run game isn't cooking, you know, all of a sudden you're really behind the eight ball and you ask Russell Wilson to do too much, in my opinion. And additionally, you know, when you look at the way they built out this wide receiver core with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Philip Dorsett, and then you add in Greg Olsen, I think it's very clear to me, John, that this is a team, and this shouldn't be a surprise because it's sort of what they want to do. They want to run the football and then have those receivers get vertical, or have, you know, Greg Olsen on the, you know, on a crossing route deep in the corner, and let Russell throw these play action shots. I just think that's how they've sort of approached this roster build from an offensive standpoint. And, you know, that's great if it works, but if the offensive line isn't blocking well, if you don't have the run game, it's hard to set up. It's hard to create those play action opportunities. And defensively, you know, you lose Dunbar. Maybe you don't bring Clowney back. I tend to think of Seattle as maybe in the second tier of NFC teams right now, just because I have so many questions about what the offense will look like, if they have enough health at running back, if they have enough juice there, and then if the defense sort of, you know, tend to fall off a little bit, regress a little bit. I would have some concerns about that team.
Yeah. What do you have on CBS Sports as far as some of the most recent stories?
Let's see. We did. We've been doing a daily. Was it Friday? The last day of our daily Pick Six podcast show on CBS Sports HQ. We've been doing the daily podcast here, and I'll even throw my guy a bone here, and I'll promo his thing next week instead of pumping up my own stuff. Pete Prisco's top 100 NFL players is coming out next week. It usually comes out in June. The buzz is that he's desperate for page views and wants to go on vacation, so he's releasing it early. But people can check that out on CBSSports.com starting next week.
Yeah, and like usual, Pete will probably not have Russell Wilson in the top 100. He's never been a big Russell guy.
We had a conference call about that. We were placing bets, like, where's Pete going to have Russell Wilson this year? Mm-hmm. It's going to be, like, five spots lower than Matt Ryan, and, like, he'll have it at, like, 28, and Matt Ryan will be 23 for whatever bizarre reason.
That's Pete. Hey, Will Brinson, thanks for joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline.
Hey, anytime, John. Have a great day.
High school athletes in our region had the sports season cut short by the pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. If you know of a local team or an athlete impacted by this crisis, use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. Coming up next, we go behind the lines and check out the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
2 hours every day, 10 to noon.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, of course, I mean, the Dunbar story certainly, I think, is the big one around the National Football League right now. And again, as we've find out yesterday, that, you know, he is involved along with DeAndre Baker, who was the first round pick of the Giants last year. And they go in and they face, of course, he faces Dunbar four charges of armed robbery. Baker gets four charges of armed robbery along with using an aggravated assault with a firearm. And so he has eight, and which they allegedly go in and take $73,500 in cash and watches, stealing them from, guys who are gambling with. And I don't know, Curtis, this story is just so bizarre.
It is, and there's tons of layers to it, too. We still haven't even heard the side of the story from Baker or Dunbar yet, and we're still awaiting them to turn themselves into the Miramar, Florida Police Department. And as of, you know, the latest update we saw was a couple hours ago, and that hasn't happened yet, so who knows when that might happen. I would hope soon, just to avoid any kind of further legal troubles. But, yeah, John, I mean, this is an incident that you hope that, you know, that justice prevails here, that the legal system plays out correctly. But I think the most bizarre thing about this, which is there's a lot of bizarre things about this, is that Quentin Dunbar went through with his media obligations yesterday about 12 hours after the fact, after this incident happened, and just carried on as though nothing had happened. And you couldn't even tell by watching the video that he had gone through this situation, you know, just, you know, asleep beforehand. That to me is probably the most jaw-dropping thing. And you got to wonder, did the Seahawks know about it? Because if they did, I can't imagine they would have let him go through with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they would not have the conference call if they know that he was, you know, under investigation or he had to turn himself into police. I mean, he just basically didn't tell them. And now you find out later that it happens. And, you know, again, we innocent till proven guilty. But boy, I mean, just the thought of this, first off, the idea that they lose allegedly $70,000 in, you know, gambling. And of course, you know, players gamble, and it's, you know, it's not illegal, I guess you could say, to do it. I mean, it's like, okay, you're playing cards or doing whatever, but that to me is very unusual. And then the idea that it's like, okay, so now you come back and you know, you got to start turning yourself in. And then what about the other three people, at least three that are, you know, driving the cars, the getaway cars, I guess you want to call it that.
Yeah, one of the most unfortunate incidents you could ever have. I mean, and this is now the second straight week we've had to talk about, you know, an NFL player and firearms being involved and with a connection to the Seahawks organization. Not saying that that is, you know, a reason why these things happen, but it's just stay home, everybody. Like, it's not that hard to stay home. And that's just how these incidents have occurred. They've been at, you know, other places, and it's not so hard to do that. John, in other NFL news, which is, it's hard to find other NFL news on a day like today when there's been so much made of the Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker legal situation down in Florida. But the Colts coming to an agreement with Jacob Eason as quarterback, Jonathan Taylor, their second round pick, and then Jordan Glasgow, a late round pick. They've all signed with Indianapolis. But Eason, obviously the most intriguing out here, because of his ties to the Huskies. But you look at that quarterback room with the Colts, you've got Phillip Rivers, Jacob Eason, and also Jacoby Brissett is still there, kind of forgotten about because of the other moves that the Colts have made. Do you think a QB needy team could make an offer for Jacoby Brissett? Do you think he's on the market?
No. I mean, I think they'd be perfectly willing to trade him because he's making $15 million a year, but there's no market. Hey, if you have no market right now for Joe Flacco's coming off neck surgery, but if you have nothing right now for Cam Newton, I mean, who's going to pay $15 million? Right now, there is no market for quarterbacks. I mean, you could say that, you know, Seattle closed one of the doors when they got Geno Smith back yesterday, which, again, was the wise thing to do. But there's no market right now. I mean, the market's pretty well done. You know, New England, they've shown no interest in trying to upgrade as far as getting anybody else. Maybe down the line, they could, you know, talk about trading back, but they have no cap room. I mean, they're $1 million under the cap at the moment. So, no, there's nothing going on right now at the quarterback position, particularly now that Geno Smith has gotten his deal here with the Seahawks.
Yeah, and speaking of Smith, that deal definitely takes away any opportunity for Cam Newton to sign here. It's another quarterback job that is, you know, shored up, whether it be Geno Smith or Anthony Gordon. So, Doug Marrone said today that the Jags look like they're done adding to their quarterback room. They've got Gardner Minshew and Mike Glennon. John, you scan the landscape of the NFL right now, I don't see a single job out there for Cam Newton, whether it be starter or backup. At this point, he's going to have to hope, and, you know, it's unfortunate that it's come down to this, but he's going to have to hope that somebody gets injured out there.
Oh, yeah, no question. And, of course, I mean, if there's no preseason games, who's going to get injured? I mean, are they going to get injured on joint practices at training camp? Are they going to get injured on practices themselves? Because remember, it's like the quarterback doesn't get hit in a normal practice, and so that's going to make it tougher. But at some point, you know, something will happen. It'll give him an opportunity to go ahead and get a job. But right now, I don't think there's any jobs available.
Yeah, it is dried up for sure. And then, John, also the free agent running backs out there, LeSean McCoy, he's available. Carlos Hyde's available. Who do you think is the first domino that falls in the free agent running back market?
I think Carlos Hyde. I mean, I know Philadelphia is interested. You know, I'm still surprised that nobody's gone for Freeman, because, again, he's a very talented Pro Bowl caliber back. You know, Hyde is solid enough right now. I mean, they're the best two running backs that are available, but you know, nobody's making a move on him.
No, and the only one that was being made, you know, the only move that really has been made in the running back market over the last couple of weeks was the Jets signing Frank Gore, who's 37 years old. Got to imagine, though, guys like McCoy and Hyde and Freeman have a little bit more upside than Gore, just because, you know, Gore's so old and he's probably entering his final season if he, you know, chooses to hang it up. It seems as, and Hyde, I think, is coming off a 1,000-yard season, right? It's surprising to see his market not shape up even at this point in free agency.
No, but again, the market for running backs just wasn't there this year. And where it wasn't there is that, you know, he had Melvin Gordon out there. He was hoping to get to me a turn down $10 million from the Chargers, and he ended up just signing 2 years at $16 million with the Denver Broncos. And so, yeah, it just wasn't a very good market. And again, running backs, and this is going to be fascinating because we already saw the big contract, you know, $16 million a year contract given to Christian McCaffrey, but all these other running backs like Alvin Kamara, and there's, you know, even when you start to talk to Chris Carson, you know, are they going to get over 10 or not? And I don't think they will. Hey, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we'll check in with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.